Gwen Moore, just elected to the 109th Congress to represent Wisconsin's 4th District, has attained something of rock star status in her hometown of Milwaukee. When a ceremonial swearing-in session was held there a week ago, it was standing room only among the blacks, whites, Hispanics, and Asians, including Hmong dancers, who came to give her a send-off.
The dynamic, the vivacious, the articulate, the intelligent, and the bad sister known as Congresswoman-elect, the Honorable Gwen Moore.
For 16 years, she was a Wisconsin state legislator. She became a tough political competitor.
You can't buy love, for one thing. You know, you need money, but you really cannot buy love. I mean, there was no competition. I mean, I had some very worthy opponents. Let me say that first off. But I think there is no substitute for the 16 years that I was accessible to people. I mean, I actually was one of only a couple of politicians that I know of who answered their phone. People were stunned when I would pick up my phone at home and say, yeah, it's Gwen.
We caught up with Gwen Moore in her new Washington office. It's been a long road to Congress. The 53-year-old Moore was once a teenaged welfare mother.
I became pregnant at age 18. It's a very important part of the story.
Had you intended to go to school?
I had intended to go to school, and literally I became pregnant in my first sexual encounter. I mean, great luck. It wasn't as if I didn't fit any sort of stereotype that people have about welfare recipients, that they have loose morals and so on. And I had a tremendous problem when I wanted to go to Marquette University. And Marquette University actually became an advocate for me. And public policy was changed. They actually wanted to count tuition assistance that I received from Marquette.
The welfare department.
People
did. Okay.
They wanted to count tuition, books, money that I never saw, obviously, as income, and thus denying me welfare benefits to take care of my children. So I made a really difficult decision. I put my child in my sister's home as a foster child in order to be able to receive education. But it was a false choice. Mm-hmm. At Marquette helped to intervene in that situation because it was not just a personal slight to me, but it had an impact on their ability to provide educational opportunity. As a student at Marquette, I saw public policy had an impact on whether or not I could even, you know, retain custody of my own child.
So for you, the way the world worked had a lot to do with public policy affecting your ability to go out and do something, and your ability to go out and do something would in turn deepen your interest in public policy. It sounds like a perfect circle.
It's just a natural progression.
And you've had a long political life now, different forum, but a long political life. You come into the Congress. What are your expectations about what you're going to be asked to do, how you're going to be asked to vote, how the party's going to examine itself and you as now a national member of that party?
Well, I can tell you that I don't plan, you know, to come in as some freshman in the minority and introduce an omnibus jobs package or an omnibus health care package. I understand very clearly that it's about getting a little language in, getting an amendment in here. It's about not having such an ego that you need for your name to be first as the first co-author.
I happened to be in Wisconsin on November the 2nd, the night of the presidential election, and was at different spots around Milwaukee, looking at the television results coming in, President Bush pulling ahead. And in all this coverage, there was the celebration for your own victory. And I am sure that you have been asked, and if you haven't already, I'm sure you will be, the Democrats are going to ask you, what do you think we need to do?
I think that what helped me prevail in communities where people thought I would get no votes at all is that people have a BS meter. People who don't agree with you want to know that you're for real. As the young people say, they want you to keep it real. And I think Democrats think the formula is to move further and further and further to the right And I can tell you, if people want Republicans, they will vote for them. I think that we lose the average common working man and woman when we try to morph into something that we think will be acceptable. I'll give you an example. We let go uncontested the accusation that we had no moral compass. You know, fringe issues like gay marriage. We allowed Republicans to define us. Instead of our retorting that we think is immoral for 45 million people to have no health care, we think it is immoral for the richest country in the world to have people who are homeless. We should have addressed that straight on. My Republican opponent, whom I have a great deal of respect and regard for, tried a couple of times in a couple of debates to characterize me as a big liberal spender. And I replied, hey, no, I am proud of the fact that I stood with people who had nothing. George W. Bush said something over and over and over again. You may not agree with me, but at least you know who I am. And I think that that resonated with people. You know, I went to the south side of my district, the American Legion post, where they asked me, what do you think of an amendment to protect the flag from flag burning? I said, I absolutely, totally disagree with that. You know, very definitive. Then went on to talk about the replicas of the flag that they were using as curtains, saying, I don't revere that cloth. I revere the principles that stand behind that. And then I talked about the 13 folds when they're folding up the flag and each one of the things that that symbolizes. That's what I believe in protecting, not the piece of cloth with a constitutional amendment. So I think people came up to me and told me how much they respected me. If you've got to find a moral compass, you've got to find your center and be proud of it.
There's been a lot of discussion about the fact that you take office as Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm has passed away. And she was, of course, the first African-American woman elected to the Congress. Also from an inner city community, Bedford-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn. Have you thought about her? Have you looked at her life?
I thought about her every moment of this campaign. I thought about her every single second and the struggle that it took to get here. But more importantly, I thought about the fantastic stewardship opportunity that this presents. You know, I am very moved by the fact that Shirley Chisholm came from New York City, a place where there is barely a blade of grass, much less any farmers. And they put her on the Agriculture Committee.
Right.
Of that, all committees.
I think her rejoinder to that was, I guess they've read A Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
But she used that bully pulpit to become a champion for food stamps. And that is a tremendous, has been a tremendous role model for me.
For more on our conversation with Gwen Moore, go to our website at npr.org.